Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Apologies for the technical difficulties off the top of the show. This is not a viable input jack anymore.
Evidently so.
It's not. It's gotten so worn down that it just kind of floats around.
I would say the fact that there's tape wrapped around it is indicative of it not being very viable.
The tape around it is to tell you which one of the jacks it is, although the two that was written on it has already worn off. But above and beyond that, it's just not getting the job done anymore. We need a new one. So, that's that. Happy Galentine's Day, Shay.
It is Galentine's Day. Oh my goodness, it's snowing outside right now.
Did you and the other lady folk go out and celebrate your femaledom today?
That's most of my friends are dudes, and my... one of the very few of my lady folk friends is hosting tavern that we're going to after this. And the other one's in Mexico, which looking outside and seeing that it is like straight up snowing right now. It's supposed to maybe drizzle.
Yeah, this won't last.
What the hell?
Don't worry about it. It's going to go
away. But the other one's in Cozumel, Mexico.
Yeah. All right.
So, no, I did not. I spent the day... reading the news, and I watched seagulls for a while.
Nice. That's
I actually crashed my car into one.
Nice.
I thought to myself, like, I haven't had McDonald's in a really long time, and I had like a tiny bit of money, so I was like, oh, go get a cheeseburger from McDonald's. And then I pulled into McDonald's, and there are literally 40 seagulls.
Oh, yeah.
Just like hanging out right there.
What time of day is this?
It's like maybe 1:30 or 2.
Yeah, that's the lunch crowd. They're waiting for people to huck French fries out of their cars.
But like, I get that. Like, I get that that's why they were there. But like, we're talking like more seagulls than I've ever seen in my whole life. And I've spent most of my life living right by the ocean, which makes seeing 40 seagulls in a McDonald's parking lot like kind of weird.
Yeah.
But then my mom called me while I was sitting in the parking lot, and she's like, what are you up to? I was like, I've just been sitting watching seagulls for 20 minutes.
Yeah. They love French fries.
They do love French fries, but she's like, well, you know, just leave. And I was like, I'm so scared that I'm going to hit one of them because they keep flying like so low.
No, they get
like,
on.
They like
they get
glide.
Yeah. Usually they do.
Because I ended up getting my cheeseburger.
Yep.
It was delicious. Thank you, McDonald's. But one of them was flying and flew straight into my windshield.
That's different.
And I just sat there. Like, wow. I slammed on the brakes and like started crying because I thought I killed a seagull. And the seagull was fine. Just sat on my hood. Just squawking at me. Like, so angry. And I'm like, hey, dum-dum. Like, the sky is so high. I can only drive my car right exactly where
I am. Shay Spillane, did not pay the French fry toll to leave the parking lot, and that seagull was making that known to you. It's like, where do you think you're going without giving us some food?
Well,
we're not hanging around here to be decorative. we're here for the sweet, sweet fries. You go in there and get some fries, and we'll think about letting you leave.
Well, okay, so that's why a seagull flew straight into my windshield.
Yeah.
It was terrifying. I thought it was going to break the windshield.
Yeah, that's like when you're
scab
trying to break a picket line. You know, they throw themselves at your car and they're like, scab, scab. You know, the seagull is telling you, hey, what are you doing here? You're breaking the social norms.
Yeah. You're supposed to give me a French fry.
That's right.
Okay, that explains all of it. Thank you, Derek.
Yeah.
Well, That was one portion of local news.
In other local news. Non-Seagull local news.
According to the Patriot Ledger, my heart broke. Five teens are being charged with assaulting a 13-year-old Braintree boy and what his mother described as a racially motivated attack. That, cute enough, was recorded on the app Snapchat.
Oh, of course.
Two 13-year-old girls, one who's from Braintree, another one from Newton, are being ordered to appear in juvenile court on charges of assault and battery with a dangerous weapon. A 16-year-old Braintree boy and two Stoughton boys, who are 13 and 15, are being charged with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon and assault and battery alone. Braintree police filed a criminal complaint with juvenile court in Quincy. Police did not release their names, obviously, because they're juveniles. But the victim's mother is pretty sure that her son was attacked because he's black.
Not cool.
Not cool.
What? Look, these are teenagers, and teenagers are stupid.
Yes.
The 16-year-old, one of these kids is 16. That kid, you try him as an adult.
Yeah. The funny thing is that the girls involved are, the youngest dude is 13. He's not 16, he's 15. But the two girls are 13, two of the three boys are 15, and it reminded me so much of growing up in Quincy, and just, it was normal to hang out with guys who were older than you.
Yeah.
But it was also normal to...
Well, they have money and cigarettes, which is what 13-year-old girls are looking for.
And pot. You have to remember
pot. That's right.
But I hate to say it, but it's one of those things where you just kind of defer to, like, whatever they want to do, whatever's going to happen, you just go along with it.
I'm going to give the 13-year-old girls a pass on this because they're 13-year-old girls, should know better. Should certainly, you know, be put through the court system just to have that experience.
Yeah, just to learn from their mistakes.
Yeah, to understand that this is not good and I don't want to do this again. If the kids are 15... Oh, boy. See, if these boys are 16 years old, like, you're old enough to know better by that point. All right? I don't like drawing arbitrary lines in the sand where age is concerned, but you show me a 16-year-old who thinks... racial attack is fun, and I will show you a 40-year-old who thinks a racial attack is fun. You're not getting over it by the time you're that age, okay? 15, you probably ought to know better, but I'm not necessarily going to chuck a 15-year-old in a jail with adult criminals.
Yeah.
To get schooled by the black gangs on race relations.
But, well, that's
the thing. A 16-year-old, I might do it. A 16-year-old, I think you should.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that, like I said, I mean, I grew up in this culture in Quincy, and obviously I'm very different now. It's still there underneath, but I'm ultimately a different person than I was then. But I did grow up in that culture where, I mean, the people who pulled that stuff when I was 14, 15... they either ended up becoming drug dealers or are in jail or...
Still live in Quincy.
Hey, Quincy's... okay, I won't defend it.
Not the nice part of Quincy.
Quincy. At least say it properly.
Quinky.
But it is, like... that's what made me... that's what compelled me to have this story be my local story is that... I was one of those girls.
Well, yeah. And it's like you are to some extent shaped by what you grow up with.
Yeah.
And it is the thing that's sad about this is that kids are still growing up with this.
Yeah.
In Quincy.
And that's, which is crazy because.
Can I tell you how much more progressive we were in freaking Melrose in the 1970s when I had black friends and nobody thought anything of it?
Well, that's exactly right. Like, I mean, when I was in high school, I was dating this guy who was half black, half Irish. And it was my brother who said to me, like, you're kidding, right? I was like, what? He said, you can't ever bring him home to Pop.
Yeah.
Pop's I've talked about him on the show before. He's my grandfather. He's like, he's just going to take one look at him and be like, there's black blood in you. Go away.
Yeah.
But it's crazy that that is. I mean, that's still very true in Quincy. As much as it's grown, like, I remember, like, driving through Quincy Center a couple months ago and being like, oh my God, there's a Barnes & Noble here? Like, what?
Yeah, that went out of business a week later.
Yeah, probably.
let's tamp down the racism, kids, is the point that I'm making. Not cool. Don't be doing that.
Even those of us who don't want it still have to deal with it. Yeah. So, yeah, I get that we're Irish and we're white as hell, but, you know, crank it down like 8 notches.
From the Boston Herald, Boston mayor.
You hate so much that that's your source.
Yeah, you know what? There are certain things that the Herald gets right. The Herald is a shadow of what it used to be. But there are certain things that the Herald gets right. The Herald has been following the story about the dude selling pot out of the smoke shop in South Boston. And it is classic Boston Herald coverage. And I highly recommend that you read it because the twist in that story today is just ridiculous. But Boston mayor, traffic congestion report misleading. You may have heard the report yesterday saying that Boston has some of the worst traffic in the country. And in fact,
I saw this.
As a city, the yearly rankings by INRIX, whoever INRIX is, said that Boston is the worst place for time wasted in traffic. We lose an average of 164 hours each year sitting in traffic. That compares to 155 hours in D.C., 138 hours in Chicago and Seattle, 133 hours in New York, and 128 hours in Los Angeles, which I got to tell you something. I've lived in both, and I've spent enough time in New York City to tell you, Los Angeles traffic is the worst in the country. Okay.
That's exactly. Somebody brought this up to me yesterday. And I said to them, I was like, honestly, living in Los Angeles, like, I used to think that Boston traffic was the worst because we're so notoriously the worst. Living in LA, like, I'd come back to Boston and be like, this is so pleasant. Like, now, my car is actually moving a little bit.
Now, here's the thing. And I think this is the difference. Because New York City, okay, when New York is bad,
it's bad.
It's impassable. Like, nothing is going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's impassable. Try getting around Rockefeller Center at Christmas time in New York City.
Oh, God. I just had a mini anxiety attack when
Forget
you said
it.
That.
Not going to happen. Like, the Midtown traffic around the holidays is brutal. And everybody knows this. Most of the time, the traffic does move. Like, yes. You know.
Well, that's the way I used to describe LA traffic to people was Boston. Everybody, I have to think of a word I can say FCC wise. Oh, I got one. Boston, everybody drives like a jerk.
Yeah.
But they know how to drive. In LA, everyone doesn't know how to drive.
Well, that's because everyone drives.
Like, but I would be sitting there.
You don't have to know how to drive because you never go fast enough to hit anything.
But I would be sitting on the 101, which is four lanes wide. Which is four lanes wide.
You had me at 101.
And there would be a sign 3 miles beforehand to get onto the 5. And people would wait until the 5 was coming up. Or the 134. I hate that we have to start the, like, every route in LA with the.
I used to commute on the 101. Okay.
They would want to switch four lanes. Yeah. And I'm like, you've had 3 miles of notice.
I used to commute on the 101.
Kidding me. I lived in the valley, so I had to do this every freaking day.
But here's the thing. There are good days on the 101. They're rare, but there are good days on the 101. There are no good days getting in or out of Boston.
But times. That's the thing.
And
is
this
that
is, well, but this is the
you can gauge when you should drive in Boston.
Right.
based on the time. Like my father.
But these guys are talking about rush hour traffic. Okay.
Then
rush hour traffic is there every single day, and every day it's bad. So here's the Boston Herald. Mayor Martin J. Walsh pushed back.
I love listening to you quote the Boston Herald.
Mayor Martin J. Walsh pushed back on a recent traffic report that claimed Boston had the worst congestion in 2018, writing in an online post Tuesday that a study calculated. Online post. Thanks for your great commitment, Mr. Mayor. Calculating drive times tells less than half the story. Quote, independent analysts have pointed out that this annual report historically prioritizes fast driving over steady progress and punishes older, denser cities where distances are shorter and alternatives to driving are more plentiful, Walsh wrote in a post to his Medium account. The mayor has a Medium account. I'm guessing.
What does that even mean?
I don't think Marty Walsh can even operate a smartphone, let alone someone's writing this for the mayor is what I'm saying.
I just almost spit water all over my microphone.
In Boston, for example, fewer than 50% of commuters travel by car, so a drive time study is telling less than half the story. So let's understand what you're actually saying here, Mr. Mayor. Less than 50% of people going to Boston drive a car. Yet we have the worst congestion in the country. Los Angeles, which has no public transportation worth talking about, has less traffic congestion than we do, where half of the people aren't even in a car.
That's true.
Think about what you're saying before you post on Medium, because someone like me is going to be sitting on the other side going, wait a minute, this is worse. This is infinitely worse than you realize.
I will say, though, you made a very good point that this is based on rush hour in Boston. Yeah. Like, if you, like, for example, I come from the South Shore to come here. Traffic wasn't really bad at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Whereas, like, in LA, I remember my father was visiting me, and it was 2 p.m. And we're driving. I think we're maybe on the 5. And he's like, what, is the president in town or something? And I said, no, this would be like this at 2 a.m. as well.
Yeah.
Like, this is just what it's like. And here it's, you can be like, okay, this is, like, this is my in. Like, this is this is when I can drive somewhere in less than 2 hours.
Transportation Secretary Stephanie Pollack voiced concerns about the report's finding, but added...
That name is gross.
But added that state officials want to use a wider scope to address traffic problems. Quote, we didn't really need a report from INRIX to tell us that congestion is a growing problem in Massachusetts, particularly in Boston. Good for you for noticing, Stephanie Pollack. Thank you. It's nice to know that you're doing your job. I think,
like, isn't that your entire job, you dummy?
I think our goal is to understand why. I think our goal is to understand why. Why is congestion worse? Because then for every why, there's something we can do differently. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why congestion is worse. There's nowhere to park in the city.
Yep.
Because you got these little tiny roads leading into the city that the worst thing that the city of Boston does. The worst, the single biggest problem we have.
You really want to make that blanket statement?
You have one tunnel that goes through the city. That whether you're coming from the north or the south, you have to go through that tunnel.
Callahan.
Right? If you're coming from the north, we all know different ways of getting in. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you're getting into Boston from the west, not quite as bad if you
really
get off
isn't,
Alston.
Which is weird. Right? Yeah.
But if you're coming from the north or the south and you're taking 93,
you're screwed.
You have the one tunnel that you go through. And when you get off of that tunnel, what's sitting there? Traffic lights. So everybody's backed up at the traffic lights. It backs up into the tunnel and then nothing moves.
Oh, yeah. Every time, I mean, even when I was living in the South Shore and working in Cambridge, every single day, no matter what kind of traffic was coming from Quincy, I would just go in knowing once I hit downtown and go into the Callahan Tunnel, I'm gonna be sitting there. I'm going to look at brake lights. Well, I don't know if you've ever seen the meme. To this day, I mean, it came out like a decade ago. And to this day, I think it's one of the funniest memes ever. It's an aerial shot of New York City. And it says, New York City, because we want you to know where you are, where you're going, and how to get there. Boston, and then it shows an aerial shot of Boston. And then it says, Boston, because F you.
Yeah, I have seen that.
I mean, that's the most accurate description. Yes. I have, like, and I kind of love it. Like, I mean, my friends from New York City came to, my comedy friends from New York City came to visit me once. And I'm driving them around. They wanted to, one of them was a gay black man. So he wanted, he was like, take me to the places I'm not allowed to go. And I was like, are you sure? But I drove them before. Obviously, I took them to L Street Tavern in Southie. But
I was going to say, take them to Newton.
I took him to L Street Tavern. He walked in. It was like you could hear a record screech to a stop. But then he said, get us some Jameson for everybody on me. And he was fine.
Nice.
But when I drove them around like downtown and Faneuil Hall and, you know, the financial district, all of that, they just looked and were like, there is no rhyme or reason to this place.
No, no. Oh, and especially down in that part of town.
Oh, yeah.
That's a mess.
Well, I explained to them because Faneuil Hall was literally, it was originally like a marketplace.
Yeah.
Where people would bring their cattle and their
various things.
That's, and that's why it's all shaped like a wheel with spokes flying out.
Colonial Boston. So,
yeah.
Those of you following at home with this story, all right, the story comes out that says Boston has the worst traffic of any city in America. The mayor denies it, all right? And he denies it because only about half of the people coming to Boston are in their cars, which is ridiculous. Because that means if 60% were coming in their cars, nothing would ever move for a week. The state transportation secretary, Stephanie Pollack, says, we need to conduct a study. That's her response to this. Now we get into the really fun stuff. Charlie Chepo.
Oh, that wasn't the fun part?
Charlie Chepo, might be Chepo, but I think it's Chepo. Charlie Chepo, a transportation expert from government watchdog agency Pioneer Institute, said the issue is only getting worse. Quote, this is a huge problem that's doing harm to the economy and holding back economic growth. We have to get serious about how to deal with this issue. All right? I agree. That's a good statement. Chepo says focusing on the MBTA and a better path for pedestrians isn't enough. I agree. He pointed to a recent proposal from the Carbon Free Boston report, which suggests a $5 fee for drivers coming in and out of the city as a potential solution. You lost me right there, Charlie Chepo. Walsh shut down the proposal and said the city wouldn't be implementing that particular recommendation at this time. Quote, I think it is something we really need to take seriously and consider, Chepo said. Folks may not like it, but it would reduce congestion. Folks may not like it. You may not like that you have to pay an extra $15 to go to your job in Boston. You may not be able to afford it, but it will reduce congestion.
Because people won't go to work anymore.
Yeah, people will stop working in the city. All of the restaurants and shops will shut down.
Dummy.
And it will look like Detroit. Detroit, not a lot of traffic congestion. Why?
Because there's no cars there anymore.
No one's there. Chris Dempsey, the director of transportation for Massachusetts, agrees. Quote,
I'm sorry, I can't stop snorting because this is all so hilarious.
Quote, this is the most ridiculous quote in this entire article. And I am not a violent man. I abhor violence.
This is true. He's not being facetious. He really is not a violent man.
But I would not be averse to someone else punching one of these people in the face, is what I'm saying. I personally would not do it.
Do you want me to do it? I'm a pretty violent person.
I'm not encouraging anyone to do it, but I'm saying that
if I were to read
a news report that said someone had punched Chris Dempsey, the director of transportation for Massachusetts, in the face, I would sit there and say, yeah, not surprising. Quote, and this is talking about the $5 driving in the city surcharge. Quote, that's a tool that competitor cities are using. Competitor cities.
I wasn't
aware that we had competitor
cities.
I
didn't know that this was a competition.
Is this, do I have a choice?
Oh my goodness.
What are my competitor cities
That's just straight up gross.
Near Boston. Is New York a competitor city? Is Manchester a competitor city? Can I relocate my job to one of those places? This is a job that competitor cities are using. I hear people talking about beat LA, but I don't want to beat them in a traffic contest. So we need to take this seriously. Will somebody please, Governor Baker, Charlie Baker, Governor Charlie Baker, I've been giving you a tough time lately. You want to get back in my good graces.
He kind of deserves it.
Fire this guy. You fire this guy.
Like, this is so gross.
I am promising a free pass to Governor Charlie Baker on the next dumb thing that he does. I won't say anything about it if you fire this guy.
Well, the irony of all of this, too, the whole, I can't believe he said that.
Competitor cities.
The irony of all of this is that a lot of the country doesn't like us solely based on our sports teams, which is an absurd reason to dislike an entire city.
No, it's pretty real. I mean, Boston sports fans are pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, we're jerks. I have a joke about it in my act.
Not as bad as the Cubs fans, but, you know.
But, well, my point being, though, that, like, beyond stupid things, stupid childish things like hating someone over their sports teams. And I sound like such a non-sports fan saying sports teams, but neither here nor there. But like, that's absurd in and of itself. We're part of the same country. To say that there's any sort of...
No, competitor cities, Shay, are using this tactic.
But that's what I'm saying. To say there's any sort of competition is insane. It's like, I mean, like, I was raised Catholic. So am I supposed to, like, it's like saying, like, that I'm at war with Protestants or Jewish people.
Competitor,
like,
religions are doing it differently, Shay. And by the way.
But that's what I'm saying, is it's a similar concept.
By the way, where are these competitor cities? Because the only city I know of that charges a rush hour congestion fee is London. London is, there are no cities in the United States that are doing this that I'm aware of.
But that's what I'm saying, is like,
unless
why
Seattle
are we,
snuck it in when I wasn't looking.
Am I in trouble for being a Bostonian? Like, what the hell? Like, this is so weird.
Well, we have to see what the competitor cities are doing, Shay. Stay on top of this.
Well, speaking of our country and national news, four men were arrested yesterday in connection with the brutal beating of a gay couple in downtown Austin last month. According to NBC News, police say an anonymous tip sent to their Crime Stoppers line helped them apprehend the suspects. Frank Macias, who's 22, was arrested and charged yesterday morning with two counts of second-degree aggravated assault. He reportedly confessed to police and implicated the three other people involved, who were his brother, Miguel, who is 20, Quinn O'Connor, who's 21, and Colby Manel, whose age wasn't available. But in addition to Frank, the three other suspects are also in police custody, facing two counts each of second-degree aggravated assault. All four of them are being held on a collective $300,000 bond. They allegedly beat Spencer Deering, who's 23, and Tristan Perry, who's 22, after the couple left a gay club holding hands in downtown Austin in the early hours of January 19th.
Have any of these people been to Chicago? Were any of these people in Chicago 2 weeks ago? Did they yell, "This is MAGA country," while they were beating the gay couple?
I know that they were hurling anti-gay slurs at them.
I'm wondering, because the Jussie Smollett thing is not doing well in terms of the investigation.
Yeah.
And, like, the facts. So if there's some way we could
discussed at great length.
Yeah, if we could somehow tie these people to that, that would be extremely helpful for Mr. Smollett.
Well, they
and
actually...
And his media enablers.
I was going to say, Spencer and Tristan's case is much stronger than Jussie Smollett's.
So who ratted these guys out?
Well, Perry, his nose got broken, and he got kicked in the head and got a slight skull fracture. His boyfriend, Deering, was knocked unconscious, and there was somebody that was standing by that ended up calling 911. There was just somebody, like, standing there that saw this happen. And that's the thing, is, like, I mean, we've discussed at length the Jussie Smollett situation.
Yes.
The difference here
is this really happened?
There was a human being that watched it all happen, called 911, and corroborated everything.
That's good. That is progress. That is what we want to see.
I would say they were both hospitalized. They are alive, which is great. But especially, I mean...
Now, but let me ask you a question.
In Austin?
Let me ask you a question,
Austin's a pretty progressive city.
Let me ask you a question. Why hasn't this been the top story on every news channel in America?
Because neither of them are famous actors.
Why isn't this all over? But is that the reason why? Or is the reason why because they weren't wearing MAGA hats and shouting, "This is MAGA country," while they were shouting their gayest slurs?
I was just speaking to my father about this. While driving across the country by myself was one of the best experiences of my life, it was also kind of awful in that it made me realize just how huge the country is and how insignificant most people are. And that's the way I feel about this story, is like, just like you said, if it was, I purposely can't remember his name right now, even though we just said it.
Jesse Smollett.
If it was Jesse Smollett, then it would be, it would be the cover of People magazine.
But there is something significant here. And what's significant here is that someone did the right thing.
Yeah.
Someone saw this happening and said, you know what?
And said, I'm going to call 911.
Not on my watch. All right. I'm calling the cops and you're going to go to jail. And I would love, what we need is some sort of national public service campaign to all of the gaysists out there that basically says, you know,
gaysists,
if you hate homosexual activity that much, don't beat up gay people, because when you go to jail, you're going to experience that activity firsthand.
Say, if ever there was karma, well, that's, I always referred to, it's funny. I remember I was like maybe 12 or 13 years old when I told my mom, like, there's this song by this guy named Ben Harper, and it's my motto in life. And I had no idea that the entire song was about smoking weed. That's how sheltered and Catholic and Republican I was at that point. But there's a line in the song that's called Burn One Down. I mean, it's absurd that I didn't know it was about smoking weed. But there's a line that is what I was referencing that says, my choice is what I choose to do, and if I'm causing no harm, it shouldn't bother you. Your choice is who you choose to be, and if you're causing no harm, then you're all right with me. And that was my point in pointing out that song to my mother, who came this close to drug testing after I told her I love that song. But that's the way I feel about it. It's like, what... how was it hurting you that there are two men holding hands? Like, in what way is that causing you any harm? In what way, like, I mean, even like I grew up very Catholic, and I was taught not by my parents. My parents were very, despite being very conservative, very progressive. But by other people in my church, other people in my school, I was taught to hate, or at least dislike, anyone who was a different religion.
Right. Because they don't want you marrying Jews.
And
because then they lose a Catholic, and they're like, oh, yeah, no, we can't keep losing the Catholics to the Jews.
But I remember, like, that was the first time I ever questioned it, was just being like, why, who are they hurting? Like, who is the Muslim girl that goes to school with me hurting by praying to Mecca six times a day?
Right.
Like, she's laying down in the middle of the hallway. Like, she's not bothering anyone. She even does it on the side of the hallway.
Yeah.
So people don't trip over her. Like,
yeah.
And it's just so frustrating.
Well, if
hearing
you,
stories like this.
If you ask these jokers, they wouldn't give you an answer. The answer that they'd give you would likely be something along the lines of, pardon my language here, God hates fags,
yeah,
or the Bible says it's wrong, or I just hate gay people. You're asking the wrong question, because you're asking, why do they do this?
I'm asking a logical question of illogical people.
The right question to ask is, how are people this dumb allowed to walk around in society? How do we get to a point where an adult can be that dumb?
It hurts my brain trying to fathom that.
How many people... Here's something you could say conclusively about this.
There's anything.
The whole it takes a village to raise a child thing is garbage. Okay, that's garbage nonsense. All right. However,
stop making me snore, Derek.
However, the obverse of that statement is true. It takes a village to fail a child. It takes an entire community to allow a child to hate in the way that these people have been allowed to hate.
Yeah. It takes a bunch of people. You're exactly right. It takes a bunch of people to reinforce and reinforce and reinforce,
yes,
and reinforce that behavior. To have someone be convinced over and over and over again that that terrible thought that they have is accurate, and not only accurate, but allowed. I think that's the biggest problem, is that, I mean, we all, when we're children, when we're preteens and teenagers, we all look to adults.
I agree 100%. We all look to adults to confirm
or deny our thoughts.
Exact thing in just a second.
We all look to adults to confirm or deny our thoughts. And if adults are confirming our thoughts, it doesn't matter if they're right or wrong.
All right, we have a caller. Caller, you were on the air.
Hello, caller.
Just give me your first name and your thoughts on this, because he has a better question than the one that you asked as well, Shay.
So, hey guys, thanks for having me on. My name is Joel.
Hi, Joel.
Conversation. So I am a gay man, identify on that spectrum. And I think, you know, the question for me, you said the question is, what's wrong with you? You know, and it was a little bit sort of aggressive. And I understand the feeling that you want to be combative in those situations. But I think the better question is, what happened to you? Because I think that really our life experiences, you know, produce a culmination of, you know, that leads us to who we are. And I think really it's an ignorance. Maybe those people, obviously they've known gay people, but maybe didn't realize it, or were so sheltered, or had family members that did things to them, or never gave them the opportunities that some of us are so lucky to have, to be in progressive circles and have exposure to all these new things. So I think, you know, coming from a place of love and asking what happened to you, and trying to find a common ground where we can say, well, what are some things that we do agree on, and how can we, you know, find some compassion for each other to, you know, we all have our baggage. So how can we just bring that to the table and love each other through whatever it happens to be?
You raise a really good point in there, Joel. And,
yeah, definitely.
And I want to hit on this one thing. Because you are right in categorizing my response to this as a violent response. You know, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, what the heck is wrong with you? Why are you, you know.
I'm almost done with my iced tea. I'll throw the bottle at him afterwards.
And you're right, because I think for a lot of us who get frustrated seeing these stories over and over and over again, where our natural response becomes, you know what, you're going to be violent to that guy, here's a little violence back. And you wind up escalating the problem, when really it is far better to approach it with a level of understanding.
Right. I would encourage you guys, if you haven't been exposed to, there's a, I guess you would call it a curriculum or a text called The Anatomy of Peace. And it really talks about breaking those cycles of combativeness and having to respond in kind to people. Instead of responding in kind, respond in this, you know, and instead of, you know, really, it just breaks down this whole curriculum, and this book breaks down really how to break those cycles of violence and come to peace, regardless of, you know, different backgrounds and different upbringings, or what the context of your interaction might be.
You know, I thank you for your call, Joel.
Thank you, Joel.
That was good. That was really good. Keep listening.
Thank you guys.
Feel free to call in anytime you like.
Keep it up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So we're going to go from this.
We are.
Next
national story.
Tough.
Joel was cool. Keep listening, Joel. I like
very
you.
Very cool. That was, and you know what? That's a good point.
He made a very good point.
You know what? Anger.
Well, and that's the problem.
Anger makes for good radio.
Anger and conflict makes for good radio. It does make for good radio.
But
anger begets anger. So, like, reacting to somebody who's acting angry towards you just makes them more angry, and it's like a vicious cycle that keeps continuing.
Those of you
and Joel made a good point that it reminded me of, I don't know if you've studied Gandhi very much, but it's the same sort of thing where, like, people would try to come at him aggressively, and his response would always just be like, hello, friend, you know?
Those of you who listen to this show know that I sit here all high and mighty and talk about, you know, violence is wrong and violence is bad and all the rest of this.
I glare at him whenever he does that, just so all of you know.
And, well, not when I say violence is wrong. You don't glare at me.
Oh, no, I glare at you when you're high and mighty,
I sit here all high and mighty, and I like to say, you know, we're on a journey together to be smarter, to come up with solutions to things, and I appreciate it. What, seriously?
I'm sorry.
Maybe that's not why you're here, all right? That's why I'm here. I don't know what you're doing here every week.
Oh, I'm here to make you go insane slowly.
No. But we are trying to find, you know, answers. We are trying to explore topics in...
That's the idea of the show being called The Big Picture.
In ways...
We're trying to look at things as The Big Picture.
In ways that are more meaningful than what you're getting from most of your media outlets. And it's good for someone to call me out and say, you know what, that's a violent reaction to that. Because it is. It is. And I agree. But I recognize that in
that
myself.
Joel was absolutely right. But at the same time, it is, I mean, even for those of us like you and I who talk about this stuff every week, we're still human beings. And it is difficult to not have a violent reaction to things like that. To not have an emotional or extreme reaction to behavior like that.
But I can say there are a lot of contexts where I would look at that more thoughtfully than I will in sort of the real time of this.
Yeah.
And be like, all right, how do we... Because my question is always, when something like this happens, when somebody gets beaten or there's an act of violence, how do we get to that point? Okay? And we talk about it on the show all the time, the zero moment.
Yeah.
But before the zero moment, there is everything that influences the zero moment. Mm-hmm. How did this person get to this point and to this situation?
Like what steps brought them here?
And that's what we need to look at. The mistake that we make in a lot of areas in our public life is just sort of trying to stop an incident from happening, okay?
Instead of making actual change.
Stephen Paddock, we've talked about extensively on this show. And everybody sits around and says, how do we stop people with a lot of guns from going into a hotel room? Easily. There are a lot of things that we can do to stop that. If you want the answer to the question to be, how do we stop people from getting guns? With political will, easy. It can be done. The question that you need to ask...
Is how do we stop people from having that line of thinking?
The reason that the lack of motive in that case is so maddening for everybody is because the real question you want to ask is, how do you stop that person from feeling the need to kill?
Well, it's very similar to a few years ago, we talked at great length about Trayvon Martin. And it's the same sort of thing where it's like that could have been so easily prevented if we could just change someone's train of thought. It has nothing to do, like, honestly, as much as like, yeah, we need better gun control. Yeah, we need more all of these things you can say. But it's a matter of changing someone's train of thought. It's a matter of changing someone's way of thinking. So that it isn't so hateful, so that it isn't so prejudiced, so that people look at other people as just human beings.
Instead of as
this guy's black, this guy's gay, this guy's fill in the blank,
right.
You know?
And in the Trayvon Martin case, you could look at George Zimmerman, and clearly, George Zimmerman was the reason that happened. George Zimmerman got out of the car. That is the zero moment. When he got out of the car, we are now on an inevitable chain of events. If he stays in the car, if he turns around, if he sits in the car and waits for the police to show up, does any of that, nothing would have happened. He got out of the car. Because he got out of the car, he should have been held. He should have been found guilty of murder. Was my feeling on that.
Me too.
It's Florida, so you got some leeway apparently still in 20.
It's absurd.
When did that happen? 2014, I believe,
I think
was
it
the
was
trial.
Like 2014.
Yeah, 2012 was the shooting. I think the trial was in 2014. But you can look at George Zimmerman, and you could as we got to know George Zimmerman, we got to understand why George Zimmerman was the way that he was. George Zimmerman was an undereducated individual. George Zimmerman couldn't keep a relationship going. He didn't have any real prospects. The only thing that he had was his dream of being a police officer. And he couldn't even do that because he saw his greater role in society as protecting white people from black people. So even the cops were like, we don't want to have anything to do with you.
We're fine.
Yeah. So he's out, you know, he in his own mind, he's become this superhero. And one of the things that we do in this society, for better or for worse, and I think in part because we don't know anything else to do, is if somebody is a racist, and particularly here in the Northeast, in cities like Boston and Cambridge and Somerville, if you are identified as a racist, you are very quickly going to find yourself marginalized. Mm-hmm. There are going to be places that you are not welcome.
Where people, the minute you display that kind of behavior.
Yeah. There are a lot of people who are just going to walk away from you and be like,
I'm not going to be engaging.
Yeah, I'm not going to be associated with that.
Yeah.
We marginalize those people. And I think internally we marginalize those people for two reasons. On the one hand, we marginalize those people because we just don't want to be associated with it. We don't want that in our lives. On the other hand, I think there is a belief that if we censure people, that if we push them out to the edges of our society, they will come to their senses and give up, you know, in this case, their racist views and come and rejoin us. And that's really what we want to happen when we push them away. Mm-hmm. When you push someone away because they're a racist, what you're saying is, it's not that I don't want you in my life, period.
I just want you to stop being a racist.
I don't want you in my life like this.
Yeah.
You fix that, come on back. We're all good. And then we're going to go, you know, we're going to go hang out and be with everybody and have a great time. But if you don't want to be around people of different religions and cultures and backgrounds and orientations, I got no use for you. Because I'm not going to cut off my life to satisfy your narrow worldview.
Well,
come join us in the fun place.
I would say, like, that's the biggest thing. I guess not the biggest thing, but that's, on the surface level at least, the biggest thing is, beyond the fact that it's horrible to be racist or bigoted in any way, the big thing, like, first encounter wise, is that you can't take somebody like that with you a lot of places.
Here's what one,
like, I had a friend in college who looked like he could be a member of Aryan Nation, and I went to college in the Bronx, so like I remember I went down the street with him and he called someone the N-word that was walking down the street on the other side, and I just looked at him and was like, alright.
Yeah, not
this is done.
Not happening.
Like, I'm not going to be around you ever. Like, this is so freaking stupid.
Yeah.
Like, how can you honestly think that what you just said was okay?
So we push these people to the edges of society, thinking that you're going to go out there and you're going to be in the wilderness and you're going to have your come to Jesus moment, and then you're going to come back and everything's going to be fine. That's not what happens. What happens is we push them out to the edges of society. They find like-minded people, particularly on the internet, and then they start associating with those like-minded people. And you wind up with little clumps of racists all over the place. Then the internet comes along, and all the little clumps of racists become bigger clumps of racists. and now you have a real problem. So that urge to marginalize, even though it comes from a good place, and even though it may come from good intentions with some people, ultimately winds up being the wrong thing to do. Because either they go off and they find their little enclaves of racists to hang out with, or they become completely internal, like George Zimmerman. And either way, the net result seems to be horrific acts of violence that we all agree have no place whatsoever in our society.
WMFO Medford.
Yes, this is a good time to say that. And this is a good time to say hello to my dear friend, Lena Horne. I know I'm on the right
thing. Who always talks about how there's no sun up in the sky because it's stormy weather.
Somebody needs to explain to me why none of this equipment...
Stormy weather.
Oh, my God. What?
Since my man I can't stop snoring
tonight.
Stop
snoring.
I'm sorry.
I'm really trying.
Well, I'll stop snoring when you know how to properly plug in the stormy weather sound.
All right, the snow that was blowing around outside is gone, and we're not going to see...
It is. I was going to say, I'm looking out, and it looks pretty...
Yeah, you might see a couple of... clouds blow through with big flakes of snow. It's not going to accumulate. It's not going to amount to anything. It's just going to be pretty to look at and a little tricky to drive in. Temperatures fall down into the upper 20s tonight. Tomorrow, mostly sunny day, high of 40 degrees. Lows at freezing tomorrow night. Watch out for wind. Friday warms up, showers in the low 50s for a high. But then the temperature falls back to 30 degrees Friday night. Saturday, mostly cloudy skies, high in the low 40s. Lows in the mid-20s. Same deal on Sunday, partly cloudy. High around 40 degrees, lows in the mid-20s. So the Saturday-Sunday, pretty much seasonable. Little bit of wind blowing around, but not quite as much.
Nothing too crazy.
Friday's going to be warm, but it's going to be raining, so you won't be able to enjoy it. It is WMFO Medford.
Oh, shucks.
On the Towel, Mikey D is coming your way at 9 o'clock tonight. But before that, we've got a lot more stuff to get to.
We do indeed.
It is Black History Month. And one of the things I love to do during Black History Month is break out clips from this album that I picked up at Slappy White's Records in Central Square.
Oh, thank God. I thought you were going to say something way more terrible.
Slappy White's? I think it's Skippy White's.
I mean, both are equally absurd.
I adore this album. I positively adore this album.
I positively adore you.
And I love having the opportunity. I play it more often, but the problem is that these cuts run a little bit long for what we normally do on this show. But every year in February, I love to pull it out. The thing I love about it is I can't understand why it even exists. Because this is this is an album that was put out by the Social Security Administration.
What?
Okay. Not a bastion of hipness or cool by any stretch of the imagination. But at some point in the late 1970s, early 1980s, they hooked up with James Earl Jones. One of the most distinguished...
And, I mean, he's like the coolest dude ever.
One of the most distinguished voices in American history. I mean, my God, that voice gives you shivers. And they put out this series of public service announcements. And there's actually... I know there's a second album of these that I've been looking for years. It's called Genius on the Black Side. And the whole point of this album, which
Genius on the Black Side, which
is public domain... is to tell people to sign up for Social Security. That's why it's there. But instead of having James Earl Jones come out and be like, you know, hey, you have to sign up for Social Security, 30 seconds and done, they created five-minute radio programs that offer insight.
That's the most... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It's just the most ridiculous idea I've ever heard.
Well, this is the thing. They created five-minute programs that offer insight and history on leading Black recording artists. This was somebody's passion project. Somebody was sitting around Social Security with a stack of R&B saying, man, if somebody ever hands...
Here's what we should do.
If somebody ever hands me a budget, I'm going to go do this. And I will tell you...
You wanted me to stop snorting? Stop saying things that are really funny.
I will tell you something. I wish the government still did stuff like this. Because
honestly, me too. Like, now that you're telling me this, I'm just sitting here like, our government, all we do now is shut down so that some orange dummy can build a wall. Like,
I want,
this sounds like a way more worthwhile use of time.
I want, like, Health and Human Services to do, like, you know, like 5-minute segments on the history of communicable disease or something like that. But anyway, this is James Earl Jones. This is Genius on the Black Side. This is...
You mean Darth Vader?
This is the incomparable Chaka Khan. You should love Chaka Khan. She is she's brilliant.
Tell me something good.
A time was when black singers, composers, and musicians had to struggle in the backwaters. Now, in the concert halls, on Broadway stages, and on Hollywood sets, they're right up there, front and center. And right up front, I'd like to invite you to listen to a genuine example of Genius on the Black Side. Chaka Khan is taking off in 1979 as the hot new black female vocalist. Chaka's career began at the age of 16 when she first performed in Chicago supper clubs, singing jazz, rock, and rhythm and blues. In 1972, she joined up with a group called Rufus, and as lead singer for that group, her distinctive voice became familiar to fans all over the world. Chaka will sing for us in a moment after this from Social Security. A disabling illness or accident can happen to anyone, young or old. With such a disability, there's always a great strain on the family budget. And that's where your Social Security protection comes in. If you've worked long enough in a job covered by Social Security, and you're so seriously disabled that you can't work for a year or more, you may be able to get monthly Social Security disability payments. There's a 5-month waiting period with the first payment for the 6th full month of disability. If you're eligible for these payments, your dependents will also get monthly checks. The younger you are when you become disabled, the less Social Security credit you need. You'll also get Medicare protection if you get Social Security disability benefits for 2 years. For more information, write or call any Social Security office. Someone there will be glad to help you. A big hit for Chaka Khan in 1978, I'm Every Woman.